Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Sediment, the official ASPN podcast that gives you a recap of all the sessions at PAS and the American Society of Pediatric Nephrology annual meeting that may be of interest to nephrologists. This episode is episode 4, Faculty Development and Hypertension, Correlation or Causation? So I'm your host and podcast editor, Sudha Garimella. I'm a pediatric nephrologist in sunny Greenville, South Carolina. And a fun fact about me is that I started medical school at the age of 17. So I've been in this field for 32 years now. And I think I should be made professor emeritus. But I do have a book recommendation, Letter to a Young Female Physician, Notes from a Medical Life. I just read this book and it's by Dr. Suzanne Coven. And it's a very eloquent and heartfelt letter to young women physicians about work-life balance and leadership, so which I thought was appropriate for the topics we're going to discuss today. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our panelists today. We have really wonderful and eminent panelists joining us today for this last and final episode for 2023, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. And so we're going to start in no particular order with Dr. Patty C. O'Meyer.
Hi, I'm Dr. Patty C. O'Meyer. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at Inova Health Systems in Georgetown in the DC area. Fun fact about me, I am really good at parallel parking, which my children don't believe, but I'm actually good at it. And my last, I'm looking at my stack of books next to me. The Island of Sea Women is the most recent reputable book that I read. It's about women in a particular area south of South Korea called Jeju Island who are famous for diving. And it's sort of like a historical fiction book. I'd like to say that that was the actual last book I read, but really I just read Prince Harry. But before that, I read the other book, Prince Harry's book, Spare. What was the last thing?
Do you have a fun fact about the kidneys that you think the public doesn't know?
Fun fact that the dumbest kidney is smarter than the smartest doctor.
Oh, completely agreed. Yes. And so we'll move on to Dr. Joseph Flynn.
I am a pediatric nephrologist at Seattle Children's Hospital. A fun fact about me is that, yes, I do readjust the blood pressure cuff when I am at my doctor's office in order there to get a correct reading or during medical procedures as what happened last week. A book I would recommend is called Ether Day. It's about the discovery of ether and general anesthesia back in the 19th century. And it's a fascinating look into medical history and very entertaining read. I recommended it to my dentist and he really liked it too. And then a fun fact about the kidney is that the kidney controls everything, even blood pressure. And that is why we love it so much.
I don't think you'll get any arguments from this group. Thank you for that, Dr. Flynn. So we'll move on to Dr. Jody Smith, who is our ASPN president.
Hi, I'm Jody Smith, a nephrologist at Seattle Children's. A fun fact about me is I grew up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and I was always grateful to be welcomed into the American Society of Pediatric Nephrology. So I grew up speaking English and French, and I was very excited to come to Seattle and think that I would be able to use my bilingualism, but it was in the wrong language. So no one is asking me to translate French around here. I would say I'm going to go with the podcast category. And I would say my favorite podcast is The Sediment. And I just want to say thanks Sudha and the rest of her team for the amount of hours upon hours upon hours that they put into this. No, Sudha, you should be acknowledged for this. And I think we need to create our own Academy Award or something like that to acknowledge all you've done. So thank you, because this brings a lot of happiness to everyone in our community. And I think it brings the meeting to all the people who can't be there. And I think that is a huge gift that you've brought. So thank you.
Thank you, Jody. It's a labor of love. I do it because I love to do it. But interesting, because I also started my journey in North America at Montreal and did an observership at Montreal Children's Hospital in adolescent medicine. And I was struck. Yes. I was struck by the fact that it's a city that has two children's hospitals. One is completely, you know, everything's in English, and the other one's completely in French.
Yeah. No, it's a very remarkable city. And who else went to McGill, Montreal, is Marva Moxie Mims. She also went to McGill. Anyway, so we can have a little club of Montreal people.
Add Dory Glenn to that as well.
Oh, great. Oh, neat.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, we have a lot of Canadian roots in American nephrology practitioners. That's wonderful to know. Thank you for that. So we'll move on to our next panelist, Dr. Vicky Norwood.
Thanks, Sudha. I'm Vicky Norwood. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at the University of Virginia, where I've spent essentially my entire career, certainly my entire faculty career. Fun fact about me is that I live on a big farm and it's a lot to take care of. So I am learning all the time. In addition to ongoing new things about nephrology, I'm learning things about chainsaws and tractors and bush hogs and standpipes in the lake and all sorts of stuff like that. I'm also realized that I'm really not very good at that. So I think I'm glad I have my nephrology career to go back on. My book that I thought I would share is one that I read a little bit ago, but I thought it was just an amazing American history book that people might enjoy. It's called Ruthless Tide. It was written by Al Roker, who is of course familiar to everybody, but it's about the Johnstown floods and the reason that it all happened, which I just thought it was a flood. I didn't realize there was actually a whole lot more to it. And it was really quite fascinating about the good people and the not very good people involved in all of that. So I just thought it was a very interesting way to get a new insight onto a big event in the past that really knew nothing about. Tidbit for kidney pearls, probably my strong desire to let the world know that I don't need to consult on a patient whose creatinine comes up too low on their lab work.
That's wonderful, Vicky. I remember from your prior appearances on our podcast about your adventures with, was it car building with your brother? Or so now it's farm work and machinery. That's wonderful. Our next panelist is Dr. Tammy Brady.
Hi. I'm Tammy Brady. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at Johns Hopkins. A fun fact about me is that even to this day, I am a huge George Michael fan. And I was one of those crazy people voting for him on the daily for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And I am proud to see that he's going to be inducted this year. I'm a little bit of a crazy person, but I absolutely love him. In terms of a book to recommend, the book that actually really to this day it lives with me is The Goldfinch. And I don't know if anybody's read that. I actually didn't read it. I listened to it on my commute to Baltimore. And so my commute's an hour each way. And with that commute, it took me an entire month to get through it. But it is really, truly one of the most amazing books, talking about the journey of a teenager who loses his mother while the two of them were in a museum and there was a terrorist attack. I can't speak more highly of it. And then a fun fact about the kidneys is what I always like to tell the patients that I see who come in with solitary kidney is that you can live a long, happy, healthy life with one kidney. And we wouldn't let people donate kidneys if that wasn't the case. And so that's my fun fact.
Thank you, Tammy. Yes, that is wonderful. Actually, on one of our prior episodes, we were talking about a session where we all discovered that kidneys are meant to live for 120 years, and we are all failing our kidneys by dying before they do. So that is a wonderful little tidbit. Thank you for sharing that with us. Next on my screen is Dr. John Mann.
So, hi, my name is John Mann. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at Nationwide Children's Hospital, The Ohio State University. And I recommend, Jody, that we come up with the golden earbuds for Sudha as her award. And I'm trying desperately, I'm Googling to get a picture of Vicky wearing overalls right now. And I just can't quite hit it yet. But if someone could post it out there so we could download it, That would be great. So fun fact about me, I was just thinking about leadership. And when I was captain of my high school tennis team and then captain of my college tennis team, I learned a lot about leadership, you know, kind of taking a bunch of people that don't really want to run and work out and really, you know, want to just like play and have fun and try to bring them along. So leadership goes far back. And then I'll leave you with my fun fact on the kidney. What's the heaviest endocrine organ in the human body? Your kidneys, because they secrete small molecules that go to another site in the body and exert an influence. And that's the definition of a hormone.
Wow, I never thought of that. Thank you, Dr. Mann. That's amazing.
I like to brag to my endocrinology colleagues, that's all.
Yes. And then joining us next is Dr. Keisha Gibson.
Hello. Hi. So my name is Keisha Gibson. I'm a pediatric nephrologist from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I tell people that I am a proud product of pipeline programs because I spent many of my Saturdays through middle school and high school in pipeline programs sponsored by UNC Chapel Hill. So I've been there a long, long time. Fun fact about myself. So I really consider myself kind of the consummate cheerleader. I was a college cheerleader. And I like to think that in a lot of the things that I do in life, I really feel like my role is being that sort of cog in the wheel that keeps us all going and saying, go, 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 go. We can do it. We can do it. Books that I've read lately. So I have this, what I used to call stack of shame. I now call it stack of goals that lives beside my bed. And of that stack, the last book I actually read was Born a Crime by Trevor Noah, which I absolutely love. It's an easy read. I highly recommend it. Beautiful story of humanity and what it was like for a biracial child to be born during the apartheid era in South Africa. And if you know Trevor Noah, you know that you're going to laugh. And then because I'm a very shameless person, I am going to plug the other last book I read was my daughter's first novel. My daughter is a writer and she has just turned 17. She's graduating from high school this year, but she published her first young adult fantasy book called The Darkest Side of a Star. And so I would encourage you, especially if you're taking care of young people that don't feel represented in most books, underrepresented minorities, LGBTQ community, that's really her drive in life is to make sure everybody feels represented. And I'm a super proud mom.
Wow, that is amazing. These children, the ones we take care of, the ones we raise, the ones we love, they amaze us every time with just how brilliantly they are, you know, navigating this complex world. So yes, I'll be sure to order that book for my front office so we can keep that on stock for our children to read. Thank you for that recommendation.
And I forgot my kidney fact. Kidney fact. I think kidneys are really and truly children. Parenting begins in utero, and they grow, they develop slowly. And then when they become teenagers, they're incredibly temperamental, but they forgive you.
I love that. Thank you. Yes. Sometimes we just have to baby along these baby kidneys. So wonderful. I'm looking forward to having an excellent discussion with all of our wonderful panelists today. But first, since the president is in the house, I'm going to start and call on her to give us a recap of our award sessions at the ASPN annual meeting this year. And we are also lucky enough to have an awardee from ASPN as well as an awardee from APPD on our panel today.
Thanks. Definitely a highlight for me, and I know for many others, was the awards luncheon. I would say even backing up from that, one of the highlights of my presidency so far, and people warned me about this, that the most rewarding thing that will happen to me is calling the people who are the founder award recipients. And that was really, really impactful and just so rewarding to be able to share that moment with these, you know, wonderful individuals. So this year, we had two Founders Award winners. Vicky, of course, won the award for 2022. When I called her, she had to pull over, and I feel grateful for your safety first, Vicky, so that you were able to say, hang on, I'm going to have some emotions and I'm going to pull over. And I'm like, oh my God, I'll get in so much trouble if you have an accident because of this phone call. And then the 2023 Founders Award winner was Blanche Shavers. And I have to say that awards luncheon was just so remarkable. And it was, I think it was so important to hear people's journeys, how they got to where they are now, really as a source of inspiration for all of us, especially when you look out at the fellows and the residents and the junior faculty, to just hear people's journey and really draw inspiration from these inspirational leaders in nephrology and also these amazing women in nephrology. So I was so proud to be able to share that moment with all of you. I don't know, Vicky, if you want to say a few words about the ceremony.
Well, sure. It was absolutely amazing for me as well. I mean, to having been president of ASPN like you are and others on the call, you're kind of used to standing up behind the podium sometimes and seeing a large number of people and such. But this was incredibly meaningful and emotional for me. It was such a wonderful honor. It can't help but cause you to reflect on an awful lot of your life and the people that have influenced you. I felt so lucky to be able to have so many friends in the room after several years of not being able to see each other. I mean, the best part of the whole week was being able to hug everybody again. And so that was marvelous, but also wonderful to say thank you to my mentors, the family members of my mentors who were able to come and who continue to support ASPN and the foundation was just a wonderful thing. So thank you for the opportunity. I will live with those memories forever. And it was really, really just deeply, deeply meaningful.
We also were able to celebrate younger individuals. So we had the Basic Science Trainee Research Award went to Michael Michalopoulos from UT Southwestern, and the Clinical Trainee Research Award went to Arthur Lee from CHOP. And it was really amazing to hear their science. A new initiative we had this year, we sort of acknowledged that we had some recognition going at the younger end and at the more senior end. And so we wanted to focus on all the amazing work that's being done by our middle population. And so we launched three new awards, the ASPN Mid-Career Award that went to Michelle Denberg from CHOP, and the ASPN Outstanding Service Award, which went to Sharon Bartosh, and then the ASPN Equity, Social Justice, and Advocacy Award, which went to Ray Bignall. So I was just so proud of our community that we were able to, you know, provide our gratitude and recognition to these amazing people who, that's another thing I said, this is like calling the awardees was the number one thing, but the number two thing, as Michael Summers told me when he passed me the gavel, was you're going to be amazed by the time and dedication and creativity that you witness day after day after day in this role. And I was just so happy to be able to recognize these all these individuals for all they've done for our society. We also were able to celebrate Tej Matu, who won the AAP Barnett Award. And it was absolutely wonderful to hear again his journey. And it was really special, I think, for him to be able to have his mentor zoom in from his hometown to be able to be a part of that celebration. It was really remarkable. Both Vicky and Tej had their family in the audience. And of course, I'm a very sensitive soul and I cry at the most light commercial. And so this was really hard for me. Mental note, you should always have a thing of Kleenex on that podium thing, at least if I'm involved. And then extra special, Blanche Shavers wasn't able to be here with us in Washington, D.C., but she videotaped her acceptance, and Michelle Rowe videotaped her introduction. And so that is on the ASPN website. So I really encourage everyone should re-watch Blanche's speech, because it really is impactful.
I'm glad you said that, Jody, because I've had people ask about whether that will be on our website. So it's good, yeah. Good to know. And, you know, I trained in Minnesota when Blanche was young faculty, and I had no idea that she was one of the first three African-American pediatric nephrologists in the United States and the first African-American woman. And as Blanche said, she was going to head back to Hickman in Seattle until, you know, Mike Maurer got in the way and wouldn't let her leave. And she's had a phenomenal career and trained so many, you know, pediatric nephrologists in the country and done so much for our patients, but also been a role model for so many, you know, faculty of color, right?
Absolutely. It was a very inspiring session. We're going to take a little break to introduce another panelist who has joined us. Dr. Priya Varghese is on and available with us today. Hi, Priya.
Thanks for the invitation. It's fun to be here. A book recommendation is hard for me because I like too many books, but I'm going to give it a shot. The book that I am reading right now is extraordinary. It's a compilation of short stories by a marine biologist, and it's called How Far the Light Reaches. And it's an extraordinary book where she draws life experiences and makes a parallel to it with her life as a marine biologist. So she equates what she's had happen to her in life with the sea animals that she has encountered. And it was really eye-opening and fun.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. So we have a lot of exciting and interesting sessions to cover as part of this episode today. And since we have both the chairs of the hypertension session on as panelists today, I thought we would start there. And so this session was called State of the Art, Primary Hypertension in Pediatrics and the New AHA Statement. And it was a very exciting session, really excellent talks on pathophysiology, the link between childhood and adult disease, as well as N of one trial. So I would like to ask either one of you to just give us an overview and your thoughts about that session.
You covered the topics, and it was all grew out of the American Heart Association scientific statement on pediatric primary hypertension, which my mentor, Bonnie Faulkner, really pushed through the AHA to call attention to primary hypertension, which people seem not to think is common in kids, but it is. And I urge everyone to read it. It's available for free to download from the journal site Hypertension. And then the talks sort of took off on little tangents from the statement, and I think sort of enhanced it. And I think so, but Tammy, I'd like to hear what you thought was one of the best parts of that session.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, just like you said, I thought that the talks really complemented each other and really did a nice job of highlighting various aspects of what we were trying to emphasize with the statement. One of the things I thought was really impactful was when Elaine Urbina was talking about the role of I3C consortium and the study showing how blood pressure in childhood really does associate with various outcomes actually in adulthood. And she had a clinical correlation slide where they sort of counted, or it was almost like a predictive model on how many various risk factors in childhood you needed to have, or with how various counts of risk factors in childhood associated with events in adulthood. And it was really, I mean, as much as I've studied this and as much as I read on the topic, seeing it written in that way and presented in that way was really striking and just, you know, emphasized the importance, I think, of the statement and the work that's being done. So that for me was one of the more impactful of the talks, although they were all unbelievably fascinating.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that by events, we're talking about death and myocardial infarction. I mean, the really hard cardiovascular endpoints that are more common with even mild blood pressure elevation. And the other talk that made me think about what I do in the office was Andrew South talking about transitioning adolescents or young adults, depending upon how you look at them, to adult care for hypertension and how little we know about how that works and how actually, if this is an important, you know, health problem, are we actually doing a good enough job in preparing these young people to take care of themselves after they leave our care?
Yeah, I thought that was really good, and again highlighted an area that needs a little bit more work in terms of research to figure out how to best handle that.
And Joseph, I would suspect that we might merit a strong C minus or D plus when you want to give us a grade for how well we're transitioning our kiddos with hypertension to adulthood.
Actually, it is a data-free zone, and as I was sitting there, I was thinking about how we could generate some data on to sort of answer that question.
Yes, and I think that that's a great area for our medicine and pediatric trained colleagues to help us out with transition, because they understand the unique challenges our patients face. I thought the session was very well attended and got a lot of interest, a lot of audience questions. It was Dr. Joyce Samuel's N of one trial, though that talk got a lot of questions and a lot of interest from practicing nephrologists. So what any thoughts about that?
No, I agree. I think that was the other one that was really compelling to me. And, you know, I personally, you know, one of the things that she did was conduct APTMs in between each of the trials to see which is most effective. And I personally would have trouble doing that. But I think that I think change my practice in that I will be a little bit more empowered to switch classes of medications if I'm not getting the effect that I'm expecting to see. And perhaps, you know, I may not be able to get an ABPM to confirm, but we'll be able to do other measures to make sure that I'm getting the effect that I want. So I thought that was very compelling. And just like you said, from the degree of interest in the audience, I think that's a really neat way to start moving the care of hypertension.
Well, and Tammy, I think the beauty of that trial is that's what we do in clinical practice, right? You start something, you don't necessarily have a good reason for what you pick, except that's what you've been using, or you know, maybe some gestalt. But at some point, is it working? If it's not, when do you assume it's not adherence versus do you assume it's maybe not the most effective? And how do you do that? I mean, it to me, it's like, wow, this is what we do. And it's just really neat to see it done in such an organized, intentional way.
So I think sometimes what we tend to do is to not switch, but to add, right? And so I think the seeing her data and knowing that many people don't like to take more than one medication, I think it would be reasonable then to switch and then potentially add if that's, you know, after a certain point that that's not getting the effect that you wanted. So I thought that was a neat presentation.
Yes, I think that's a great point, Tammy. It's that, you know, we are used to our way of escalating to highest dose and start a second medicine, but we don't think about interchanging them. So that's a point very well taken. And, you know, I was just saying earlier that, you know, one of our prior episodes, we talked about, you know, cutting edge technologies and machine learning and AI. And, you know, I said that we are all being dragged, you know, sometimes against our will into the 21st century, finally. This is a good segue to the other session that we had, which was You're in the Know, which was about how do we help pediatric nephrologists in training, young faculty, people who are mid-career with research, and especially clinical research. So I want to start with Priya. Do you want to just give us a recap of that session and, you know, your excellent talk?
Oh, thanks, Sudha. That's sweet. Actually, you know, the You're in the Know session started with junior trainees, many of them trainees, giving some cutting edge research. And I have to tell you that this is one of my favorite parts of the meeting, because it just shows us how rich our future is because of all these excited trainees. So one of the first sessions was very interesting. It was Rebecca Levi, and she was from, I believe she's from the East Coast. I can't remember.
Rochester.
She's mid-peds from Rochester, yeah.
And she did this fabulous session on prevention of CKD with a particular deletion. And at the end of her talk, basically suggested that the answer might be in broccoli, but there's more to come on that. But still, she was an extraordinary, you know, calm and eloquent speaker. It was hard to believe that, you know, she was a trainee. She got a lot of questions. And then the next one was an award-winning first-year fellow, Arthur Lee. He was fantastic. His project was using machine learning to identify metabolomic signatures for CKD. And he spoke as though he had been up at the lectern for 10 years. First of all, it was an absolutely new area of science for most of us in the room. And he spoke a different language, but his slides were so well prepared and he spoke so clearly that all of us in the room could get why we need to be excited about this. So he was the well-deserved recipient, not only of the ASPN award, but the SBR award too. So that was a lot of fun. And then unfortunately, one of the speakers could not attend. She had a family emergency. And I thought we were going to have a lot of extra time in the session, but there were so many questions for all these abstracts that we actually filled the entire session. So the last talk amongst the abstract session was Alexandra Idrova. She was from Dallas. And she, it was an intense study, but a really eye-opening study. She hooked people up, she hooked kids up when they were on dialysis to assess their myocardial strain and their cerebral oxygenation. And it was almost intuitive what you would expect to see. You could see the strain when you were pulling fluid and as dialysis progressed, but it was really elegantly done and amazing to see it, you know, with her graphical representations. And again, extraordinary work for people that were still in training. So that's how our session started. And then they had Mary Leonard and I come up and chat about career guidance. I have to say, in fact, I said this when I was giving the speech, I'm not quite sure how I ended up on the stage with a department chair, that to the Mary Leonard. But I think the, while personally, I love the abstracts, I think the session was very well received. I think people liked that balance of the abstracts and the career guidance session. There were a lot of questions during and a lot of questions after the session. So I really feel like it was a well put together session, which, you know, there was only standing room. In fact, people were getting turned away at the door because there was just no room inside, you know, for anybody to get in there. So it was a lot of fun, Sudha.
And, you know, Priya, I think you highlight the fact that, you know, the majority of our fellows, when they graduate training, are going to be doing clinical research, right? I mean, and nowadays, what's clinical research? It used to be you were bench or clinical, and the boundaries are pretty clear. But, you know, when you look at Lee's project, is that bench or is that computer AI, computer world, you know, or is that clinical? Or, I mean, nowadays, the boundaries...
It's all translational, though.
It all should translate into better care for kids. So I do think there's a piece where we need to equip our fellows to be able to multi-flex, you know, do clinical research, move into, you know, more external, you know, research that's the quality that requires external funding, but also be able to do the simpler things and be contributors in those ways. And as we all know, it takes time to find your lane. It takes time to find your passion. So it really struck me, those projects, Priya, were like, just fantastic. And like in your presentation, clinical is the big tent nowadays. And that's what most of the fellows, if you talk to them, say, you know, we ask them, what do you want to do academically? It's clinical work, right? Clinical research.
Yeah, I think that's well said, John. I think that came up even during the career counseling session, where Mary and I and many of the other faculty in the room recommended for fellows who are interested in clinical research of any type that now you need that master's program to get that background in epidemiology and biostatistics, because the world has changed. We've got to keep up.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's one of the pillars for faculty development, is like learning to have not only your basic skill set, but additional skills as the field develops. And how do we, you know, stay abreast of all the new technologies, the new statistical softwares, and using machine learning and artificial intelligence to our advantage so we can deliver better therapeutics. So it was an excellent session. But one other thing that our faculty always have to do is, you know, learn how to be leaders, because it doesn't come naturally to many of us. And we had an excellent session. And I know, Patty, you and Keisha, you were part of that group that was doing the leadership session. So I would like to call on you next to tell us a little bit about, you know, what came out of those sessions, what have we learned, and the rest of the panelists, all of you are leaders in the field, so you can join in.
Yeah, I have to say it was a little bit of a surreal moment standing on that stage. I mean, definitely there with Sue and Tammy. And, you know, it's amazing how much you continue to learn. You know, the things that you thought you knew 15, 20 years ago,
does not necessarily apply now. And I learned so much just by listening to my co-panelists. You know, I think it's also interesting too, it was an opportunity to think a little bit about that transition from being a fellow to being an attending in the world of academia. And you think about some of those themes that are just kind of pressed into our heads. You know, one of the things that I think that I walked away from, you know, trying to be reflective, my particular session was how do you, answering the tap on the shoulder. And, you know, one of the things that I really tried to get across is that as a fellow, you know, we really have to work to say no and learn when to say no, how to say no as frequently as you can, because you have 3 years to get it done. And you just cannot do the world. But once you move into the world of facultyhood, you know, that kind of changes. And you have to really learn how to say yes and how to strategically say yes at the right moments, which is often when there's an opportunity in front of you that scares you the most. I really, you know, thought that that session was amazing. Interestingly, I don't think that we had conversations about what the other was really going to talk about before, but I felt like we all sort of dovetailed on each with what each other was saying quite nicely. And I felt that it was I think it was a well-received session.
Yeah, I just have to add that my imposter syndrome was strong that day, sharing the stage with Pat Brophy, Keisha, Tammy, and Sue Firth. And what I found as being a mid-career kind of evolving leader was I was just impressed by how humble and approachable all the speakers are in real life, but also were very honest on the stage about who they were and their struggles. I don't know that you would get that at every professional meeting with these amazing powerhouse leaders. And I felt that that was a really unique part of Pete's nephrology. And what I also loved about it was, in a very kind way, all three speakers, you know, Sue sort of talked about the first your first faculty position, what to ask for, how to take an active role in shaping your first faculty job. Tammy talked a lot about mentorship, and I've heard her give a similar talk before about how much responsibility there is on the mentee to take an active role. And then, of course, Keisha's talk about sometimes approaching a scary invitation and saying yes. For all three, I just felt like it was such a great message to say, like, you have to take an active role in your learning and your leadership. But they also gave so many great examples and practical tips and tools. But that's kind of the message that I took home, that we are all responsible for our own evolving careers. And I really hope that all of the young leaders in the room also heard that. That's what I took from it. So I enjoyed being up there.
No, that's wonderful. So just like our kidney facts, maybe we can just go around, and all of you who are in leadership roles and positions, for those who missed the session, do you have one piece of advice, how to develop yourself as a leader?
Well, I'll start off with two. One is that, as you said, Sudha, leadership is not something you're born with. It's a learned behavior. It's a learned skill. And the best leaders continue to learn, continue to read, continue to discuss, continue to reflect, continue to learn from others. So we have to take that sort of growth mindset in our leadership and really recognize that we're going to keep hopefully developing and becoming more effective if we are humble and recognize it as a learning journey. And then my second sort of observation is the things that I've learned the most from as a leader have been the things that were a mite uncomfortable saying yes to and embracing. You know, the things that are like, I've done this before, this is easy, don't necessarily deliver as much learning and as much growth. But when you take on a role that's like new and different and makes you stretch, that's the way you really augment your learning. So I would really encourage people to be willing to say yes to things that you may not have thought what was in your sort of wheelhouse. Right, Jody?
Exactly. That sort of defines, you know, Keisha, you showed that video at the front of your, at the beginning of your talk, and things that you're afraid of, maybe those are the things you should say yes to. And I was flashing back to when Larry called me and talked to me about taking on this role. And I just think that, you know, thank goodness I said yes, because it's just brought me so much joy and I've learned so much and met so many amazing people. And if I had listened to the fear and said, oh my gosh, how could I ever take on this position? Sort of like Keisha, you were talking about when they reached out to you about ASN Treasure. I think it's so valuable for us to share those feelings. I loved your session, Keisha. I could have listened to you all talk there for hours, because I think those are the most valuable things we can learn from one another. I mean, obviously we have to learn science and all that stuff, but those are the sort of intangible things, lessons from one another that we can hear when it didn't go well, more importantly, and then how you pivoted. I think I love those sessions, and I wish we could hear from people like you forever. So. But yes, saying yes when there's a fearful situation and your heart sinks and you want to hang up the phone and say, wrong number, you called Jody by accident. So thank you.
Jody, that's really, really sweet. I'm reflecting on one point that Patty made, which was just how transparent everybody was willing to be on that stage. And, you know, the honesty that you sort of walk into these positions thinking that we know what the next 5 years and the next 5 years after that is going to look like. And then you try something and it doesn't work. The grant doesn't get funded, or your program gets dissolved, or, you know, appointments change, new hospital administration. And then, you know, what do you do? And, you know, it's easy for sometimes people to feel like those are moments of failure, but sometimes it's just, you know, there are opportunities to sort of reevaluate and shift where you're going. And it was just really nice to hear sort of that shared experience among all of us of having those moments and realizing that, oh, it's okay. That's just kind of how this thing goes.
If I could put in my two cents, first, I think it's important to acknowledge you're going to make mistakes, but you need to be willing to learn from them and change based on what you've learned. And then the other, I think, important thing as a leader is to surround yourself with people who keep you honest and who ground you. And so that can be very important in making sure that you stay true to your path.
I'll add on to that too. I think having those trusted advisors, friends, colleagues, mentors, whatever, who you can go to when you're feeling uncertain about how a leadership role is moving, or whether you're even going to say yes or no to it in the beginning, somebody that you can deeply trust to have a real conversation about what kind of opportunity this is or isn't, what the risks are about it, where it may go, and how it fits into where you think you want to be, is incredibly valuable. That leadership, I think we're somehow taught that leadership means you're there alone. And sometimes your position is one where you're relatively alone. But if you leave yourself stranded without the support of others, that, as Joseph said, can keep you honest and allows you the opportunity to touch base about things that are don't feel particularly comfortable, you just really won't end up in the right place in the long run. And so that good leadership is always teamwork. And that comes whether it's at the beginning or the middle or the end of the leadership role or off to the next one. So in every little part of it, I think, and that's why I just to get to this point in my career and realize how many people I have that I consider part of everything I've always done. It's amazing and it's wonderful, because instead of feeling like me did this, I very deeply feel how we did all of this, and how much better it is because it was we and not me.
I think Tammy did such a great job highlighting what Vicky and Joseph just said, where she talked about the need for that mentorship team, including those horizontal mentors. And after she presented that slide, Tammy, you did such a wonderful job. I was thinking back on it and thinking of all those friends and colleagues who really were horizontal mentors, although I didn't have a fancy name for it, and how critically important they were. And since that session, I have used lessons I've learned from all three of you lovely ladies, including in mentorship conversations about what students and trainees need to do to be successful, and how important equipping yourself with that team of people around you is.
No, Sudha, I can't resist to get in my book right now, which is Lincoln on Leadership. It's a book by Phillips. It's about 15, 20 years old. But one of the things that Lincoln and his success taught us is if you surround yourself with people that are smarter than you and people that have skills that you don't have, you'll look like a really good leader, and you will actually develop really good outcomes for the people you're leading. So Lincoln on Leadership by Phillips is his last name. I think it's Donald Phillips, is a really interesting read and has a lot of nuggets.
I'll be sure to get that book. And that's a good cue for me to say this, that Dr. John Mann, congratulations, because you were not at this conference, but at the program directors conference, you were chosen for the Robert S. Holm Leadership Award. And so congratulations. And, you know, all of us are basking in that reflected glory of you being a pediatric nephrologist who's leading the path in medical education and leadership for the next generation of physicians. So I just wanted to bring that up. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that the ASPN does offer a leadership course. And it's a plug. I think many people on this panel have taken that course. So,
product placement is important. I was just going to say that all of the things everybody is saying, I learned from the ASPN Leadership Conference years ago as I was thinking about taking a leadership role. And now I've taken a new leadership role and I think about those concepts truly every day. I mean, maybe I didn't understand them at the time, but I understand them and I'm living them now. And I really appreciate what Vicky just said about it being isolating sometimes to be a leader, especially at a smaller institution. But to know that there are colleagues across the country that relate, you know, to where I am at managing a smaller group, and knowing that I can actually just reach out to them and bounce ideas off of them, you know, that was very unique, I think, in our society. And I can't say enough good things about that program and the people who took the time to build and develop that, who are mostly on this call too.
And again, I will be remiss if I did not mention that there is a medical directors sort of alliance. I don't know, Priya, what do you call it?
We call it the division head group informally. The fancy name is the ESPN Leadership Learning Collaborative, but everyone just calls it the division head group.
And it's been super helpful, especially to those of us who are just trying to do it all in smaller centers. So ASPN is here to help that. And so in the interest of time, I'm going to now turn again to our fearless leader, Jody, who's going to maybe end this episode by giving us a brief overview of we have had a very successful annual meeting of the ASPN. Our program chair, Kim Reedy, was on our first episode, and she said that there were two major themes for this conference. One was workforce development, and so the leadership sessions and the research development sessions were geared towards that. And the other one was to showcase the innovation that's happening in pediatric nephrology. So I think we had a very successful conference on both of those fronts. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, thanks. I think it was an incredibly successful conference. And again, huge thanks to Kim and the program committee who really meet all year round to put it all together. I think moving forward, you know, the best is yet to come. We are in the middle of launching our strategic plan. I think it's 4.0. And we've really used the last year to get as much information as we can from all of you to figure out what our priorities are. The work of ASPN is done by volunteers, and we want to make sure we're doing the right stuff and we're meeting your needs. And so the only way we can do that is by hearing from you. We've met with, as part of our ASPN tour 2022, merch on sale, but on it's going to be discounted because it's 2022. And we met with over 300 of you and heard from you in terms of what your priorities are for us, what we're doing right, what we could do better. And most importantly, hearing from people who aren't members of ASPN and how can we meet their needs, because that's who we really want to also have our ear open to. So our strategic plan has 5 goals. Within those goals, the committees and interest groups have developed, I think as of Last week when we updated it, 84 different activities to meet those goals. So amazing, amazing activity that are planned really to sort of meet the needs of the society. Some sort of highlights, we have Workforce Summit 2.0 to really build on the work that's been done. Just thinking that we really need to continue to work on our workforce issues. Another big thing is IT innovation or development. So we're going to have an ASPN app. In addition, we're going to update the website. And I think something that we heard loud and clear over the past year is we focus a lot on building connections. I think they weakened a little bit with COVID, and we're trying to build them back up again through new communication methods. But we want to sort of recognize the importance of things that Priya launched with the division directors group, Sharon Bartosh led, and that was part of her outstanding service recognition as the transplant interest group. People need help doing their jobs. We've had four interest groups just start from last year, acute care nephrology, you know, my citrate protocol isn't working. Can I use yours? I'm losing my ABPMs. What are you using to track with FedEx? All these different things, a hypertension one, med peds, and then bones and stones. So I think we want to help each other make connections, and we're already doing that with the interest groups. We're going to take it next level with a partnership program, visiting scholar program, to sort of give those next level support for people. So excited for anyone to be involved in any way. As I said before, any amount of people's participation is welcome, small, medium, large. We'd love to have you, we'd love to hear from you. So very excited to be in this position.
Thank you so much, Jody, for your excellent leadership of the ASPN. I also love the fact that we always meet every year along with the Pediatric Academic Society's meeting. So that gives us a chance to catch some content which is of relevance to pediatric nephrologists, but was probably not programmed with our programming. And one of those sessions was one that, Keisha, you were involved in. And I loved the title, Using Science to Dismantle Racism. So we're going to end our episode today with a few words from you about that excellent session. And I want to just give a shout out to Dr. Joseph Wright, whose talk just brought me to tears. So Keisha, tell me about this wonderful session.
Yeah, no, it was really an honor to work with Alina Chin, who is a health service researcher out of Boston Children, to put together this state-of-the-art plenary that was focused on using science to dismantle racism in medicine. And really what we wanted to foster was a nuanced conversation to talk about how we deal with sort of this converging worlds of genetics, research in genetics, and research in sociological research, as we're thinking about race in medicine. And I was, I think we both were really, really grateful to have such heavy hitters being willing to give their time to give us talks in these in this session. So Joseph Wright, who many of you know, is the Chief Health Equity Officer at University of Maryland. It's a pediatric emergency room doc, but he's held many leadership roles in the AAP. So he sort of kicked us off with a little bit of a tour of history of how did we get here, and really shared examples of history that have shown us how, unfortunately, bias has sort of interwoven itself into what we have looked at as science to guide our clinical algorithms. And, you know, I think what was really important about this session was that there was a really strong point made that is not that the algorithms that we're using themselves are racist, is not that these were bad people, biased people that were really trying to think about how do we measure GFR, how do we measure pulmonary function. You know, this, we never asked a question. There were some observed differences. You know, we look at creatinine in different populations, but nobody asked the question, why were there those differences? What was it about these cohorts that we were basing this data on? And so now we're having that thoughtful moment. And so Joseph Wright sort of helped us understand how we got there. Then Chris Janot, who is a bioinformatist from University of Colorado, gave us this really state-of-the-art lecture on how we're using genetic tools in research to really think about geographic ancestry and risk alleles, and you know, and how we utilize those tools to try to help ascertain whatever biologic component that we're trying to you know, assess, but understanding that it does not necessarily correlate by race, but by our recent geographic ancestry. We then had Naomi Priest, who is a physician all the way from Aussie land. So from the University of Melbourne, who studied under David Williams in Boston, but came to us from Australia to talk about how we measure social risk factors directly. So she really gave a tour de force talk in 20, 30 minutes, helping us understand, you know, how do we measure racism directly? It was really interesting to hear, you know, her perspective from Australia, you know, that doesn't really utilize race. You know, there is about indigeneity, so indigenous populations versus others. And so, you know, as we oftentimes, I think we're very North America centric, US centric when we're thinking about these things, you know, what does it mean globally? And then I was really proud to have Dr. Mavra Moxie Mims, you know, who's now Division Chief of Pediatric Nephrology in DC Children's National Hospital, and for a long time was with NIDDK, to really talk about the efforts that the nephrology community went through to really be thoughtful about how do we eliminate the use of race in our EGFR calculations, not just sort of blindly dropping it, but really going through the process of how they interrogated multiple different formulas, the process of coming together with the National Kidney Foundation and engaging stakeholders over 9 months to really sort of lay the groundwork for other other subspecialties to do similar work. And so this session was very timely because Dr. Wright was able to announce that the Society of Thoracic, I'm sort of butchering the name, but pulmonology, has now gone through a very similar process to eliminate race from pulmonary function testing. And I think we as nephrologists should feel very proud that our community was really the first to lead these efforts. And again, sort of leading with science and not just sort of our emotions behind it.
Yes, and it all started with a medical student questioning it.
It so absolutely
that's the
did.
Power of you know our learning pattern. It may look hierarchical, but it's actually very flat. So I love that. The other point that I really shocked me, and then I thought I should have known that. Why didn't I know that? Is that the pulse ox does not work the same way on the skin of people who have a little more melanin in it as it does in those who don't. And I think there was data shown during that session which showed that we really can't trust pulse oximetry in all skin tones.
Right. So. And it's just an example of how these algorithms, you know, these things, tools that we're utilizing sort of feed into more disparities that we saw during COVID. And you wonder, and all the pieces that came together to explain why we were seeing greater mortality in communities of color. So this was it was really an amazing session, and all of the authors were very gracious enough to be willing to allow their slides to be uploaded to the PAS website so that people have access to them.
Yes, and as we sign off, it's just a reminder to everybody listening that there is, you know, on demand, and you can go back and look at those slides and some of the sessions that you can listen to again. So if you were not able to make it, or like me, when you wished you could clone yourself and be in two sessions at the same time, you can catch the ones that you missed online. This is our last episode for 2023. The sediment will return in 2024. And so this is your podcast editor, Sudha Garimella, signing off. And a heartfelt thank you to all of our panelists tonight. Thank you for spending a Monday evening with me. We hope that these series of podcasts have been educational and informative, and will encourage all of you to join the American Society of Pediatric Nephrology if you have not done so already.